it's something that must be addressed, and I'm so glad that we're doing it. We are live with Dave Wigington of geoengineering.org, an expert, a researcher, documentary maker, and producer. This gentleman has done so much research on the topics of geoengineering, chemtrails. He's got a recent documentary out called The Dimming, which everyone needs to see. Go and watch it after this interview. But thank you so much, Dane, for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Gratitude's mine. This issue desperately needs a voice. People need to look up, understand what's happening in our skies and the ramifications from this. And as you mentioned off the air, very correctly so, there's a lot of things we can try to protect ourselves from, to hide from, but we have to breathe. And this contamination now from the aerosol operations is ubiquitous all over the planet, every breath we take.
Yes. So like you mentioned, just off the air, we were saying when it comes to things like the vaccines and the hidden ingredients in these injections and what's happening to people all over the world, you could argue that people had some sort of a say over this, where, you know, they could have left their jobs and not had the injections, but you don't have a choice over breathing this air or what they're putting in the waters. And every single day, I mean, I watched What in the World Are They Spraying, your documentary from some years ago, and it seems to have ramped up a lot since then, particularly, and you said you're aware of what's happening in Australia. Our skies are covered, completely covered in this stuff, day in and day out. We can't escape from it.
And it's important to try to contemplate, for those that are starting to look up and consider this issue, how much material it takes to blot out the entire skyline. The stated goal on the record by the world's most recognized geoengineers like Dr. David Keith was to put 10 to 20 million tons of aluminum nanoparticles into the atmosphere annually. And that's not even taking into consideration all the other geoengineering constituents, barium, strontium, manganese, polymer fibers. Now we know graphene. But we're talking about an unimaginable amount of material, again, to blot out skies in that manner. It's happening all over the globe. So the contamination on the ground is extraordinary.
Well, I guess where we need to start, Dane, because some people may not be aware, let's start with, what is geoengineering?
Geoengineering is a rather deceptive term. People tend to think of something to do with perhaps earth strata or something in that range. They have the terms deceptive for a reason, but another term that's more applicable, solar radiation management, also stratospheric aerosol injection, cloud albedo enhancement. All these terms mean is the dispersion of light scattering particles into the atmosphere for the stated purpose of deflecting some of the sun's incoming thermal energy to slow down the warming of the planet. None of the consequences are taken into account, of course, like the pharmaceutical cure for the human body, where you see a new pharmaceutical that claims to treat a certain symptom, and then you hear the side effects and you wonder who would possibly take that product. And it's the same mentality. There's just too many people committed to this. And the bottom line is, this is important, these programs are not benevolent in any way, shape, or form. It's about power and control. The narrative is being propagated by the climate science community as something they could, may, might do someday if things get bad enough. In reality, these programs have been ongoing for 75 years with already cataclysmic results. But from their mentality, they're too far in to turn back. And again, they're using weather as a weapon all over the globe. We have historical precedents and record of this. So this should not be seen as some benevolent attempt to make things better that just isn't going well. This is about power and control, make no mistake about that. But it's important to know the climate science terms, the stated objectives, so that this is approached from a standpoint of credible information, so that we can build bridges with the climate science community that's, again, pretending this isn't going on already because their paychecks and pensions depend on them pretending that. But it's essential we get this issue out in the open so that populations around the globe understand they've been committed to a grand and lethal experiment without their knowledge or their consent, an experiment from which there is no return.
You mentioned that it's not benevolent. I've seen David Keith in multiple documentaries that you've released. And I recall, particularly in What in the World Are They Spraying, and I won't quote him exactly, but there was a question posed to him as to what impacts this would have on human beings. And they said, well, we don't really know. They don't care.
You're completely correct. In fact, that was me that posed that question. That was an international geoengineering conference. There was about 100 journalists and researchers there. They allowed, I believe, three questions. I was one. And when I asked him after his 3.5 hour symposium of dumping 10 to 20 million tons of nanoparticulates in the atmosphere, my question to Dr. Keith was this: have any toxicological studies been done, human and or environmental? His first paraphrased answer was, well, we looked at how much atmospheric particulate loading there is from pollution and other sources. And in his opinion, a little more wouldn't hurt. And my follow-up question before they cut me off was, those particulates in the atmosphere aren't bioavailable aluminum. Had they studied that? And then he said, let me be more careful. No, we haven't. Could terrible things happen tomorrow? We don't know. So think about the cavalier attitude they have. They have no concern for the consequences of their actions. And also, if we carry this further, I know this is a big leap for many, but in fact, if we look at the wider horizon, it's not a leap at all. It's very rational that the fact that populations all over the globe are slowly but steadily absorbing these materials, because inhaled aluminum, for example, and that's only one constituent, there are many more, and when they're combined, they become much more toxic overall. But let's just look at aluminum. When that's inhaled, it's much more damaging than ingested aluminum, because when aluminum nanoparticles are inhaled, they enter the olfactory nerve and the nasal passages, enter the bloodstream, they can cross the blood-brain barrier. And so we see IQ levels dropping precipitously around the globe. In fact, in the US alone, they've dropped 6 to 9 points in the last several decades. That's astounding. And yes, atmospheric pollution from other sources is a problem. Chemicals in our food, all of that's a problem. But aluminum specifically is well documented in the case of Alzheimer's, dementia, ALS, other neurological diseases. In the case of Alzheimer's, based on peer-reviewed science study, there would be no Alzheimer's in the normal human lifespan of 100 years without aluminum in the equation. And interestingly enough, that researcher, Dr. Exley, was let go of the institution that supported him and his researchers because they don't want this kind of information out. They don't want the public to know this. They don't want the public to connect these dots. And Maria, you know the bees are disappearing, right?
Yes.
The pollinators are disappearing. And so let's look at them for an example. We have your listeners can search bees aluminum, and they'll find peer-reviewed science study that documents bees are dying of symptoms that resemble Alzheimer's and dementia in a human being. They can't even find their way back to the hive because they're full of aluminum. And why isn't this a massive red flag headline everywhere? Because those in power absolutely do not want us to know this. Alzheimer's Foundation, they have members of the aluminum industry sitting on their board, and they will try to do everything they can to prevent anyone from distributing data connecting Alzheimer's with aluminum at any of their events. I know firsthand because I tried. I tried to pay a donation of $500 for a booth to pass out peer-reviewed science data. They threatened to arrest me, which I invited them to proceed with because that would bring more attention to the issue, and they then declined. But the whole system is rigged from bottom to top. I mean, there's much more than even what I've already outlined, but it's absolutely a horrific scenario, and we will all soon pay the price if we don't get a change of course on this.
Well, you mentioned before the weaponization of weather. So I want to, I think a lot of people are starting to realize this because it's a rarity these days to look up into the sky and see a normal sky. Particularly, I mean, I don't know what it's like in the United States right now, Dane, but here in Australia, and I've got photos and I'll show them to the audience a bit later on. It is rare to look up and see a normal sky these days. I've taken photos because I've thought, my goodness, we finally have a normal sky, first time in months. So people are starting to realize that this is going on, but is it too late? We've got to do something about this because they're literally poisoning us on the daily, and we don't have a choice. So I want to ask you. You mentioned they've been doing this for about 75 years, but we've seen the steady progression or the increase. Talk us through how it started and why it's increased so much now.
All important questions. And to put this into context, because so many people, the first question they ask is, why would they do this to themselves? They, in this case, being the central bankers, those who control the central bankers, those who print the money control militaries, thus they control countries. All roads lead back to those who print the money. You can't do what we've done to the planet. The human race has been very poor stewards of the planet. I'm not a fan of any of the environmental groups, because all of them exist to protect their 501c3 nonprofit. They will not address this issue because they don't want to lose that nonprofit. So their hypocrisy is absolutely mind-numbing to us at geoengineeringwatch.org. And our attorneys have spoken to their attorneys. We know this is the case. They simply won't address this issue because they don't want to lose their 501 nonprofit. But if we look at the rise in global temperatures up to the end of World War II, they were going almost straight up. At the end of World War II, miraculously, and very perplexing for this climate science community, because they didn't realize these programs had been deployed right after World War II, and they started over the polar regions. That's the air conditioner for the planet, the polar regions. So there was a statistical leveling off of the temperatures, and we would expect the initial deployment of these particles into the atmosphere to have a profound effect before the negative aspects took hold. So we can't know for certain if the leveling off of temperatures from 1945 to 1975 was statistical falsification, or how much of that was an actual leveling off of the warming. But the temperatures again begin to rise because we have again the negative effects kicking in. Geoengineering is destroying the ozone layer, single greatest causal factor for ozone layer destruction, which is not being disclosed. We lose the ozone layer, it's game over. And that, we can elaborate on that in a moment, because that's a very near-term existential threat for all of us. But they begin to double down on these programs. The more the heating begin to build because of the negative consequences, they just double down again, increasing the scope and scale of these programs. By 1998, which was the warmest year ever recorded on the planet up to that point, they radically increased the scope and scale of the operations. They coined the term climate change in lieu of the global warming term. Why did they do that? Because they knew they were going to be causing radical weather and temperature whiplash events. And Maria, you've probably seen some of this in Australia, where it might go from 80, 90 degrees Fahrenheit to 30 or 40 degrees in a day or less. I know you guys deal in centigrade, but have you seen very precipitous drops in temperature all over the board?
But and
So,
ridiculous rain patterns, flooding. It doesn't make any sense. We're being told we're going to be flooded until the end of the year, Dane.
well, again, for those that think that, and we hear this from many, in fact, we just saw it from a fact check group in Australia that claimed this couldn't be climate modification because you can't modify the climate on this scale. That's what the Australian fact check group stated, which is absolutely patently false. Historical record, Project Popeye in Vietnam. We were flooding Vietnam in the 60s. How much further has the technology advanced since then? Of course, they have the technology to redistribute precipitation patterns and flood a region over and over and over, as they did in Vietnam in the 60s. So for those that want to convince themselves this isn't going on, that's just a form of denial. But they have continued to ramp these programs up again and again and again. There's, of course, phenomenal amounts of money being made by Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, and the rest, all the defense contractors, aircraft manufacturers. But it's much deeper than that, because although, again, it's a method for those in power, and this is a very important aspect of the climate engineering operations, they are trying, in addition to using weather as a weapon. And now what we see is crops being crushed all over the globe, flooded, droughted out, flash frozen. The consistency with which crops are being crushed. In fact, India just lost a huge amount of their wheat crop from temperatures of 120 degrees in April. And again, the crops are being crushed all over the globe. And this clearly is part of the agenda at this point. I can say that with confidence. The consistency is inarguable. But the climate engineering operations have also allowed those in power to mask the true severity of planetary meltdown in order to keep business as usual as long as possible, in order to confuse and divide the population in regard to the true gravity of what's unfolding. And the way they do this, Maria, let's take the eastern half of the US lower 48 states. for 10 years running since 2012, that's been the most anomalously less warm region in the entire world for 10 years in a row. That's the most populated portion of the U.S. So we have huge percentages of the U.S. population. In fact, I think even as of a survey last week, 30% of the U.S. population could care less about the climate. They think there's absolutely nothing wrong. They certainly don't care about climate engineering because they've been kept cool and wet. While here on the West Coast, it's absolutely hellish. Every summer, I live in a forested location in Northern California that was once lush, green, wet, 70 inches of rain a year. And the last four summers, we have literally 2 months a year where it looks like we're living on Venus. The sky is full of smoke. You can barely see the sun. Everything's dying, burning. We just had a rainless winter here. So you know how much rain you've had on the East Coast of Australia. We had not had from December, late December to about early April, our whole winter season, we should have had about 50 inches of rain where I live, way over a meter. And we had less than 1 inch. And we can see them on satellite imagery cutting off our precipitation. So California, you know, Maria, is a huge agricultural source, right? Our crops. So again, the consistency with which they're cutting off precipitation here is absolutely causing cataclysm with agricultural everything here in California.
That's the other part. It's the agriculture that gets affected. We're being told that now we're having global food shortages and it's because of Russia. But meanwhile, they're burning down food distribution plants. Our agriculture is affected by the geoengineering. I just want to really quickly show the audience this screen. This is the Rainmaking Act. Rainmaking Control Act of 1967 from Victoria. This is in legislation. It's in force. It's been effective since 2013, as you can see down here. This is not legislation doesn't exist unless they plan on using it. And what I'm just going to ask again, I'll ask the audience right now, please share this interview now, especially to Australians, so that they can see what is happening in our skies, how important this is, apart from killing off a bunch of animals and destroying food plants. We're also having our farmland completely destroyed by what's in the skies. So I want to know, I guess we can start talking about what is actually inside chemtrails. What are chemtrails? What is inside them? And as you're talking us through it, Dane, I'm going to bring up some slides from Australia.
Well, the constituents that we've identified in hundreds of lab tests overall, we have primary elements like aluminum, we have barium, strontium, manganese, polymer fibers, graphene. In the case of aluminum, many would wonder why are they using aluminum, because it's highly reflective, and that is the stated purpose of solar radiation management, to reflect some of the sun's incoming thermal energy. Again, they don't consider the consequences, at least from a PR standpoint, from a public relations standpoint, but clearly, the nature of these materials serves the power structure in other ways that they would never admit to, that this is making populations cognitively less functional. It's a very slow, insidious buildup of this material in our systems. And again, when you're talking about nanoparticles, and that's what we're dealing with, we identified that in our surface and atmospheric lab testing at geoengineeringwatch.org. The smaller the particle, the more bioavailable it is and the more bioaccumulative it is. So it's easily absorbed, hard to get rid of. In the case of aluminum, it adheres to cell receptors like a plaque. That's what we have with Alzheimer's in that case. And so, again, it's affecting all of us. It's affecting the entire web of life. It's affecting root systems. We have peer-reviewed study to prove that bioavailable aluminum causes root systems in trees, forest foliage, to shut down nutrient uptake. So we have agencies pretending that, for example, with the tree die-off in the western U.S., it's just the beetles killing the trees. The beetles are a symptom of a sick organism. And so in every level, in every agency, we have nothing but deception being put out. So those who control the narrative control public opinion and keep the public oblivious. But the bottom line is this is a very, very lethal mix. And one more point about this. I'm sure, Maria, all your listeners know aluminum is extremely toxic, right? They would know that. And we know mercury is toxic. So let's take those two elements. We all have mercury in us for many reasons. We have coal-fired power plants around the world, and we have toxic fish with mercury in it now from the oceans. Now we all have aluminum in us. So in the case of those two metals, we have peer-reviewed study to prove that when they are combined, although both independently very toxic, when you combine the two in our systems, toxicity can increase as much as 10,000%. That's 100 times worse. It's called synergistic toxicity. And now we would add barium, strontium, manganese. We have polymer fibers now showing up in organs with everyone they test, organs, bloodstreams, polymer fibers, again, part of the climate engineering mix. And so again, it reach a point where it's a wonder any of us are still able to function. And how much longer we can, it's is anybody's guess. But on top of all this, are biologicals being used? When we know graphene is in the mix, we have about 90 precipitation tests, almost all of which contain graphene, as we discussed off the air. We know graphene is a biological carrier. It's used for a biological carrier. We know in the case of the spreading of CV19, we had 85 countries infected in 3 days, 85. We know that Italian researchers have identified COVID-19 attached to airborne particulates. There's a lot of puzzle pieces here that absolutely connect. And let me take it one step further. The world's second most recognized climate engineer, Dr. Ken Caldera, who now works directly for Bill Gates. Bill Gates called him his most amazing teacher. At geoengineeringwatch.org, we own an audio of this scientist who used to work for the US Department of Defense, stating what he did for the Department of Defense. One of the things he did was to design methods of spraying pathogens into clouds to infect the populations below. Is that not a lot of dots that connect?
We've seen from the patents that part of the plan to infect people, this is through the gain of function research and through the patents, part of it
Yes.
was to make it transmissible through the air and make it more transmissible through the air, through aerosol spray, in fact, it listed. So you're
Yes.
right in saying this is all linked. And I mean, again, for the listeners, you have a choice whether you're going to put a needle in your arm. No one has held you down and told you yet and told you that you must be injected with this, but you don't have a choice over what you're breathing every single day. I mean, you open a window in your home and this stuff will come in. And we'll get into what sort of ways there are to protect ourselves, Dane, later, if there are any. But I want to know who is responsible? We've seen, I actually want to bring up, can you see when I share the screen, Dane?
Yes.
Okay, I want to bring something up and show it to you and to the audience. These are flight paths here from Australia. This is here in Sydney, actually, over a place called Penrith. What is, can you explain to us what we're looking at here, Dane?
Certainly, it's a grid pattern, and this is we see this in Flight Tracker 24 here in the US as well. And so the attempt at many to deny that this is this issue and pretend it's some sort of commercial flight traffic. Would we see that kind of a flight pattern with a commercial aircraft? Obviously not. They're flying grid patterns. And interestingly enough, we recorded the same types of patterns directly over major burns on the US West Coast 2 days prior to that burn igniting. And we tracked one of those aircraft back to JP Morgan. So what are they doing flying that kind of a pattern directly over a burn area just prior to the burn being ignited? I'm talking about the car fire in this case. And since Australia incinerated also before it was flooded,
Yes.
it's very important to understand what part wildfires serve in the geoengineering agenda. I would encourage your listeners to search this title. Wildfires serve geoengineering agenda. Extremely important report. And what we found at geoengineeringwatch.org in the case of the wildfires is that there is science study advocating for the intense burning of forests, northern and southern latitude, to provide temporary cooling for the polar regions. And that seems counterintuitive. How could a wildfire provide temporary cooling? Because when they burn that hot, the smoke particulates are elevated very high into the atmosphere. They stay aloft for as much as 2 to 3 months, and they end up over the poles because of the Coriolis effect, the spin of the planet. So let's take last summer here in Northern California. Maria, were you aware by chance, most people aren't, about 40 million acres went up in flames in Siberia last year. You heard of all the fires in the West, but did you know that over 10 times that went up in Siberia?
I did not.
40 million acres. So we had record low Arctic ice extents in July of last year because of the smoke. And this was acknowledged by the climate science community. By the end of the melt season, it was only the 12th lowest year for ice, at least statistically. That's the only access of data we have at, can reach. So that's how desperate they are. And they're desperate to mask the polar meltdown because populations will wake up to the severity of what's unfolding. And in the case of the Arctic, there's a tremendous amount of frozen methane deposits there. Once the sea ice melts, the ocean absorbs 90% of the sun's incoming thermal energy, where the ice reflected 90%. So they're desperate to keep that from happening. But the paradox is what they're doing is actually further fueling the process because they are so radically altering upper level wind currents over North America and other parts of the Northern Hemisphere, but specifically over North America and the Western Atlantic. They're altering upper level wind currents. That's altering ocean currents, which is now causing warm water to pump into the Arctic, which is actually further thawing these deposits on the seabed. So they're not mitigating anything. They're not helping anything. In the attempt to hide it, they're making the situation exponentially worse. And again, from every conceivable direction, and we can talk about the ozone layer when you're ready. But if we had, as an example, on the ozone layer, if we had no other challenges, none, if the human race faced no existential threats, that alone is an extinction level event. And based on, in Australia, you feel how intense the UV is there, correct?
Yes,
UV.
absolutely.
So, and we know that it was first announced the ozone hole over the southern hemisphere. That's where they started climate engineering first over the polar regions. So that's where this issue began to rear its head at first. But we are now getting UVC on the surface, very high levels of UVC. And for your listeners, the UV spectrum, you have UVA, UVB, UVC, then X-ray. We're told 95% of incoming UV is UVA, 5% UVB, no UVC, and of course, no X-ray. Now we're seeing up to 40 or 50% UVB. We're seeing substantial amounts of UVC, which is a DNA damaging spectrum of UV radiation. It's killing plankton, it's killing insects, killing trees. And now we begin to detect some trace levels of X-ray. And this is extraordinarily alarming. We're seeing in the Northern Hemisphere consistently as much as a 60 to 70% depletion of the ozone layer. On the current trajectory, we may face a functional collapse of the ozone layer, which means it's functionally no longer able to block the UV in as little as 18 to 24 months. That means we're not going to be growing any food. That means the ocean will completely collapse because the food chain will collapse with it, plankton. That's how close this is. So plug this back into COVID, which I would argue is a power structure response to, and it's an easy argument to make if you look at what they've said on the record that, we need to thin the population radically soon. COVID's a response of the controllers to biosphere collapse. Biosphere collapse has beat them to the intersection, and now they're having to ramp everything up because all their efforts to pare down society to that point had not been as effective as they would have liked that to be. And to add more credence to what I just stated about this being connected to a thinning of the herd because the planet can't support populations, let's look at what Zygmunt Brzezinski stated. Are you familiar with him by chance? Zygmunt Brzezinski, he's a presidential advisor for U.S. presidents from President Lyndon Johnson all the way up to 2017. That was when he passed away. So he was an insidious behind-the-scenes advisor to U.S. presidents, and he stated, and your listeners can look this up online, they'll find it. He stated on the record that with today's technology, it's far easier to kill a million people than to control them. That is their mentality. This is from a U.S. presidential advisor stated on the record. So again, the totality of what we face cannot be overstated. The immediacy of what we face can't be overstated. And that's why we're focused on this issue. And you so correctly state, and this is truly a bottom line factor. All must consider. We cannot hide from what they're doing in our skies. There is no escaping it.
I want to look at this screen quickly, Dane. And again, this is just one of these strange flight patterns. One of these says that it's a private owner. The other one says general aviation maintenance. I want to ask you, these people, you just said this person said it's easier to kill a million people than to control them. Who are these people that are flying these aircrafts that are spraying these toxic things that are destroying our planet, our health, and humanity? Who are they?
Well, again, at the top of the power pyramid, you have those who control the central banks, those who control the money, the global elite, the families many have heard the names of before, Rothschilds, Rockefellers. And at this point, what's important for people to understand is we don't have countries with governments. We have governments that control countries. It's simply a form of state-sponsored mafia. That's what it is. And so for people to think those at the highest levels of power care at all about their welfare or their health or their posterity is ridiculous. At this point, the power structure sees populations not just as expendable, but as a radically and rapidly increasing liability. And why have certain things happened in Australia that they have not been able to implement yet in the US? Australia gave
up their... gave up the firearms, but we're also an incredibly compliant nation. We've never really had to stand up against our government. And for the most part, we're comfortable and cowardly. I'm just going to say it up front. And we'd rather just go along with whatever they tell us to do so that we can return to some sort of a normal life. And I don't speak to this audience when I say that, because they're strong people. Most of the people that tune in to Z Media have lost everything, or at least a lot, including their jobs, relationships, homes. They've experienced incredible loss to stand up for what's right and not go along with what the government is doing to them. But for the most part, Australians have no backbone. They're easygoing. She'll be right. And before you know it, they're killing us through the skies on the daily.
I'm sorry to say Americans are not far behind. And I have been in this battle for a very long time. And so many have left me in the ditch on this, and they go on about their lives. They don't want to be bothered. They want to pursue personal pleasures. And so we're unfortunately not far behind. Again, yes, a lot of Americans are heavily armed, but that's not going to save them when the environment no longer functions. You know, I know people who think they're going to go live off the land in the forest when the forest land wild animals can't survive. They're certainly not going to survive either. So Americans need to wake up as well. And hopefully we can wake up. The ultimate goal would be to wake up the U.S. military, for example, because the U.S. military is bigger than the next 10 biggest militaries combined. If we could reach a reasonable percentage of the U.S. military who are a core part of the global climate engineering operations, so they understood they're killing themselves along with the rest of us, killing their posterity. And many struggle with that. You know, why would they do that? It's important to understand, and I'm sure you know this, that it's very compartmentalized. These people are being told they're doing something benevolent, something for the greater good, which couldn't be further from the truth. And an example I like to give, it's effective, was the U.S. military pilot when he was spraying Agent Orange all over Vietnam. Was he told this is going to kill your comrade on the ground? Of course he wasn't told that. So it's imperative we get this issue out in the open. And I would argue if we do, if anything can cause a shockwave around the globe, it will be this right now. And this is important to remember too, as toxic as all these elements are, as horrifically as it is affecting all of our systems, very slowly and insidiously, but that's picking up momentum. At any point of their choosing, if those in power feel they're losing control of the narrative, which they certainly are losing control of the narrative already, and the war in Ukraine helped them distract everybody from the fact that they're waking up that something's very wrong with the whole COVID scenario. But at any moment in time, if they feel they're losing control of the narrative, they can increase the lethality of the dispersion they're already emitting in our skies, and we're done overnight. They can do it any time they choose. And that's imperative to remember. They have the elements to carry this out. They have the complete systemic apparatus already in play for 75 years. They can level the playing field on a moment's notice if they choose.
Well, I was just about to say, guns or not, you can't shoot the chemtrails. So I guess, okay, you're saying that at a moment's notice they could essentially kill off people through the sky, through what they're spraying in the skies. They could decide. Are we saying that they could say, just like they did with the injections, this region, we're going to release this batch and it's going to kill people? Are we saying that that's what they could do through the skies as well?
Well, certainly they could. Absolutely they could. In fact, let's look at historical record for those that think governments would never do this. As of 1977, going even back that far, as a matter of historical record, the U.S. Department of Defense had already conducted no less than 239 open-air biological tests over innocent and unknowing U.S. populations. 239. And let's look at the nuclear detonations, for example, in the U.S. And Maria, you probably hear many say, you know, again, they wouldn't do this to themselves. But I would ask people to consider how much have they done to themselves already. We've had 2,400 nuclear bomb detonations on the planet. It's contaminated every living thing on this planet. But they did it anyway. Project Starfish, the detonation of hydrogen bombs in the magnetosphere, they had no idea what it would do, but they did it anyway. Fukushima, nuclear meltdown, triple China syndrome, no end in sight, no technology to fix it. And they're building 60 more nuke plants right now. So we're not dealing with sanity. But if we look at how expendable populations are to those in power, you've seen the nuclear films, Maria, right? Where you have, for example, US soldiers that are very close to the nuclear detonation in the Nevada desert, and the bomb goes off and they jump out of the ditch and run toward the explosion. And all those people die early deaths, all of them. They're expendable completely. And the downstream effect from the nuclear detonations in Nevada, we now know from peer-reviewed study, killed no less than a half a million U.S. civilians. Almost no one knows that. That's from the downstream nuclear contamination further east. So again, we're not dealing with sanity, certainly. We're not dealing with benevolence. And populations are a massive liability to those in power at this point. What do we think they're going to do? They're doing it.
So these pilots that are flying these planes, are they just unaware? They think that they're doing something good for the planet, or are there some that actually know that they're spraying poison into the skies? Surely they know what's in this stuff.
I would argue both. And if we look at that, let's one consider how absurd it is for example, the whole climate science community to pretend that this isn't going on in our skies. I mean, somebody with a 5-year-old IQ could figure this out if they weren't head somewhere where it doesn't belong. So we have so-called experts lying for paychecks and pensions, or some of them are so programmed, so delusional that they convince themselves this isn't so. I saw an interview with the pilot of the Enola Gay that dropped the nuclear bombs in Japan. And it was interesting to see how much he was trying to convince himself and others that what he did was a very benevolent, necessary thing to kill 100,000 civilians in each case. So perhaps psychologically, there's something that just overrides reason, and they try to convince themselves consciously what they're doing is okay. We know in the case of commercial aircraft, for example, we know they're being used for these operations. There's no question. We have film footage of commercial aircraft, nozzles visible, up close photographs of those nozzles turning dispersants on and off. You might remember, Maria, when the luggage became a big deal on the airplanes where you couldn't carry, you had to reduce your luggage. Remember all that? Going back quite a few years, and we think that's when they were really beginning to incorporate commercial aircraft. They needed to reduce their payload weights to allow for some of the dispersion materials. But we see no evidence that commercial personnel are involved at all. Their planes are involved, and we know that the Department of Defense, the U.S. Department of Defense, is leasing hundreds of commercial carrier aircraft with commercial markings. Why? Why do they need those aircraft? And so, you know, the red flags are absolutely everywhere. But I would say some of these pilots know, some don't. And for the ones that know, this is important to consider also. Are you familiar with the Milgram experiments
No.
in which they're fairly, you've probably seen this, although most aren't familiar with the name. The Milgram experiments are where individuals were taken into a mock test scenario where they were to administer an electric shock to a
Oh,
person behind a one-wheeler. So you've
yes,
seen
yes.
that. And so about 80% of the people would continue to turn up that shock into to a lethal level if they felt someone in authority was telling them to do so. And that's the mentality we're dealing with in the human race, unfortunately.
This is unbelievable. I mean, again, like with everything else that they're doing to us, Dane, the only way to stop this is a mass awakening, mass public awareness of what these people are doing. This is a huge piece of the puzzle. I really want people to understand this is a huge piece of the puzzle of what these globalists are doing, this new world order. You mentioned before that animals won't survive. They're talking to us now about the fact that they're growing meat in labs. This is a way to, and they want us to eat bugs too, Dane. The World Economic Forum wants us to eat bugs and get used to eating bugs. They've put out an ad about it recently. It's got lovely music in the background, making it seem really appealing, and yet there's worms in your face. So they are creating this crisis under the guise of climate change in order to bring about the other crisis to add to the other crisis that they're creating, which is controlling our food, making sure that we do not get nutritious food. This is linked to all of it.
Yes. And the equation is more complicated though, in regard to the climate. We've been very bad stewards of the planet. There's no arguing that. We've cut down the forests. We've poisoned the oceans. We've paved much of the planet. We've cut down the trees. If you shut all forms of human activity off right now, we would still hit the wall. You can't undo what's been done. And climate engineering is a huge part of that. I mean, again, because it's been deployed for 75 years, it has, in essence, prevented the planet from responding to the damage done. In the case of the wildfires, for example, the single greatest causal factor is climate engineering, period. It has to rain more overall in a warming planet. 7% more moisture is held in the atmosphere for every degree C of warming. And we think we're about 3.5 degrees C right now. Maria, you hear them talking about trying to stay below 1.5 degrees C all the time. That's total fantasy. It's a delusion. Our frontline temperature readings indicate we're past 3.5 degrees C right now. And climate engineering making that worse, not better. Trapping more heat than it deflects. Making the overall situation exponentially worse. But bottom line is the current human population on planet Earth is not going to be here much longer. And that's something that can't be rationally argued around. It's not a matter of space, because we get letters from people saying, hey, we could all fit in Texas and still have room. It's not about room. It's about resources. It's about food supplies. It's about the planet's ability to produce those. We've depleted soils everywhere. We've poisoned waters everywhere. But climate engineering, again, in the attempt to mask the severity of what's unfolding, has radically accelerated the entire equation. And they're using it as a weapon, not just a weapon of weather, but a biological dispersion platform as well. I mean, the data absolutely backs that up. So, yes, there are many agendas. You're correct. Yes, they've tried to degrade populations in every imaginable way, fluoride. And going back to, again, your question on the pilots, do they know what they're doing? Let's look at the medical industrial complex. It doesn't take much deductive reasoning, especially from a so-called expert, to know that when you inject in a normal vaccine, when you inject aluminum and mercury, neurotoxins, that's going to do damage. It can't not do damage. And yet we have nearly the whole of the medical community pretending, the so-called experts pretending, that this is something beneficial. I mean, the programming runs incredibly deep, and so does the willingness to do whatever they're told in exchange for their own personal benefit. But we face a very difficult situation now. Again, there's no preventing the implosion of society that we are on the cusp of right now. But here's where we need to understand certain fundamentals. Those in power could not do what they do without the active or passive support of the majority population. We should not give them the choice to decide who lives and who dies. And right now, by society going along with this matrix, we are giving them the power to choose, and that needs to stop.
I want to ask you, Dane, you're absolutely right, and I think people underestimate the power that they have. At the end of the day, if there was enough of us standing up and saying no more, no more of this, no more of your control, no more of your plan for a complete one world government takeover of every single citizen after you finish killing off most of the population, no more. we'd have a fighting chance. So even though some of these things are very hard, and a lot of the problem is that people don't want to learn, or it's all too much, and they don't want to think that the government's killing them. So it's much easier to bury your head in the sand. Sure, until one of your relatives dies because of the poisoning that has been in our water supplies, in our skies, or until, as you said, dementia, Alzheimer's, until one of your loved ones gets an early onset Alzheimer's, and it's because of everything that we've been inhaling this entire time. I mean, they're poisoning us from every angle. But I want to ask you, is it too far-fetched to presume that the floods that we're getting here in Australia are geoengineering? Because Dane, that the all of the areas that are being affected are those areas along the East Coast that have been pinned as smart cities. So they want to rebuild all of these. They're telling us we need to build back better. That's what our New South Wales Premier Dom Perrottet has said. And they're calling this team that wants to rebuild all these areas Resilience New South Wales. So we had fire trails going up that line, and now we've got floods going up that line. I've actually got some images I can show you. Let me bring them up while you chat.
First, in regard to the flooding in Eastern Australia, there is absolutely no question that is a direct result of climate engineering operations. So, multiple factors to consider. When it comes to cloud seeding, that can be used to disperse precipitation, to reduce it or eliminate it completely, or it can be used to augment precipitation. It depends on the size of the particulate dispersed. In the case of holding those systems in place, which is what's happening in Australia, atmospheric high pressure domes are doing exactly that. They're holding those systems stationary. Maria, you remember Hurricane Harvey in Texas that did all the
Yes.
damage? We recorded the microwave transmission installations that are used to repel air masses, which in that case kept that storm from coming on shore, kept it right where it was. That's how so-called weather forecasters, which are nothing more than script readers at this point, and I'm not saying that in jest, they're literally reading the scheduled weather passed down to them from Raytheon, who does all the weather modeling for the National Weather Service and National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. So you have the geoengineers actually doing the scheduled weather and the so-called weathermen reading the scripts. But to compare Hurricane Harvey in Texas with what's happening in Australia, we recorded the transmissions and their effect on the storm systems themselves, repelling it, holding it in place, keeping it from moving onshore and breaking up. And when you saturate these air masses with these electrically conductive particulates, that's what allows the radio frequency microwave transmissions to manipulate those air masses. When you manipulate the particulates, you manipulate the air mass, and that's exactly what they're doing. So they can, with high pressure domes, which are manipulated with installations like HAARP. I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of HAARP in Alaska, High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. They put an acronym on it that doesn't mean anything on purpose, so it's not so suspect. But these installations, in the case of HAARP, which is, I think, 3.5 million watts of power beamed into the ionosphere, an electrically charged layer of the atmosphere, which heats that layer profoundly, unimaginably. And this is scientifically not disputed. Its stated purpose is to cause a bulge in the atmosphere to create resistance for an incoming ICBM, intercontinental ballistic missile. But it also pushes down in the atmosphere, and that's what creates the high pressure heat dome. And we have the same thing happening in California. The ridiculous resilient ridge is they use this to steer upper level wind currents, which steers precipitation, steers it right around us, and cuts off our moisture completely. So there are ways they can augment precipitation or they can completely eliminate precipitation. But in the case of your floods, there's no question climate engineering is a core causal factor. And to look at the other side of this equation, Maria, I don't know if you might remember immediately after 2001, the 9/11 attacks, General Wesley Clark, the former NATO Supreme Commander, was given a list of Middle Eastern countries to be targeted. You may not be old enough to remember that, but that list clearly existed before 9/11 occurred. Subsequently, every one of those Middle Eastern countries underwent a once in 1,000-year drought. Their precipitation was completely cut off. That destabilizes food supplies, that destabilizes populations, that makes those countries much easier to manipulate and control. And we had the leaders of some of those countries, in the case of Iran, on the floor of the United Nations, stating emphatically that NATO was cutting off their precipitation. But no one gets to hear that. We have it on film footage, him stating this. So again, by cutting off precipitation, they can crush crop production, food production, by radically augmenting precipitation, just like they did in Vietnam over 50 years ago. They can flood entire regions with the same accomplishment and also devastating populations that they may want to try to manipulate for the reasons you cited. I agree with that. There's many agendas going on. But here's the bottom line caveat. None of those agendas will mean anything on a planet that no longer supports life. And I would argue we are so perilously close to that point. There's a cascading collapse scenario where we have about 50 feedback loops in full swing right now. If we look at methane that I mentioned earlier, and they try to blame methane on agriculture, cow flatulence, you've heard that argument. And
yes.
Of course, that angers people, you know, I can't have my hamburger. But they do that to cause this sort of division while not mentioning the methane that's thawing and blowing out. In fact, if an image you could pull up that would be very powerful for your listeners, if you search Siberian methane craters and take a look, because you have to see it to believe it. This is methane deposits that are thawing and literally exploding into the atmosphere. And they're trying not to alert the public to this scenario. There you go. That looks like a giant nuclear bomb hit, doesn't it?
Yes.
And those are huge. Those are huge craters. Some of them 200 feet deep, 200 feet wide. That's methane exploding into the atmosphere. Now that's happening on the seafloor on a scale exponentially larger. Methane over a 10-year time horizon is 120 times more potent than CO2 as a greenhouse gas. So the equation is very complex. Climate engineering making that situation worse, not better. And people think if you acknowledge certain dangers that are happening with the climate, you must be an Al Gore fan. And that's not the case. Al Gore's a power structure puppet. He's a part of the problem, so are the environmental groups, but that doesn't change what's happening. Maria, you're familiar with the Bermuda Triangle scenario, right? The ship sinkings and the planes, and you've heard that, I'm sure.
I am. Right? I'm just looking. I'm just fixated on this photo because I can see the size of the helicopter here compared to the size of this crater. It's enormous.
It's huge. So in the case of the Bermuda Triangle scenario, that's methane release. We've had methane that's thawing and releasing because the oceans have been warming for many decades. And when methane releases on the seafloor, it aerates the water like a bottle of champagne. The ships have no buoyancy and they just sink intact. That's exactly what's been happening. So those in power know this. They know known it's been happening for many, many decades. They've tried to mask the situation of the public, keep business as usual, retain their power. That's what a cancer does, right? Cancer doesn't consider that it's going to kill the host by continuing to proliferate. And we're dealing with the cancer, no question. So again, the severity of what's unfolding can't be overstated. Collapse is imminent, I would argue. There's no stopping that, but we could change the composition of it radically. If we woke up enough people in time to, one, stop what's happening in our skies, if we could do that, if we could expose it, we'd have a chance of stopping it. If we could do that, we would at least buy time by allowing the planet to respond on its own to the damage done. Because right now it can't. It's in a climate engineering straitjacket, and again, a toxic straitjacket that's contaminating every single breath we take. So if we look at this from multiple directions, in the ozone layer I mentioned collapsing, and that connects to something I say often on our broadcast, Global Alert News, which is our weekly broadcast at geoengineeringwatch.org, commercial-free at many stations around the country. But something I make clear often there, that the greatest and most immediate threat we collectively face, short of nuclear cataclysm, is climate engineering for all the reasons that we've covered. But even in the case of nuclear cataclysm, climate engineering is connected because it's destroying Earth's protective atmosphere. That has made us much more susceptible to a coronal mass ejection, a CME, solar flare. And so if we have a radical solar flare now, a large solar flare like the Carrington event in the 1800s that shuts down grids all over the globe, we're going to have nuke plants everywhere that can't cool themselves. Now we're going to have Fukushima times 100 or 200. So again, that road leads back to climate engineering. So must we not deal with the biggest hole in the bottom of the boat, starting with the reasons you mentioned at the beginning of this broadcast, very correctly so. In fact, that is the most fundamental reason. We have to breathe. And if we keep breathing this material, we're done. But even beyond that, there are profound reasons that we must deal with this priority issue first, or nothing else will matter.
Yes, I want to, before we wrap up the interview, I want to show people some areas of your website that are helpful and the resources on there. But I want to just bring up this picture again, Dane, and then I want to talk to you about graphene. I know we're going a bit over the hour, but this information is just so important for people to know because, again, until people have the information, they can't really do anything about it. You've got to have the knowledge in order to do something and then be able to educate others as well. So I just want to show you this image again. This is from the RAIN radar, the image on the left, that shows these striped rain patterns. I want to hear from you whether these are normal rain patterns. Do we ever see rain patterns in these stripes like this?
We don't see anything at this point that we can consider, quote, normal. And the interaction of the radio frequency microwave transmissions with the precipitation, because that precipitation is seeded and the microwave transmissions affect the precipitation patterns. As an example, Maria, have you seen the herringbone patterns in the clouds in the sky? Perfectly symmetrical herringbone patterns.
Yes.
And we have this so-called experts trying to tell us that that's gravity waves, which is something that would be caused from the topography on land below. Then why would we have the same patterns over the oceans? There's no topography over the oceans. It's flat. And why would we have overlapping in patterns of these herringbone scenarios in the sky that go in different directions and all of them overlapping? And that's from different transmitters that are overlapping their signals. I mean, the lies are absolutely immense. The condensation trail lie. Let's cut to the chase on that. That's a massive deception on populations all over the globe, perhaps one of the largest ever. We are not dealing with condensation. We have up-close film footage on our site, and I encourage your listeners to look, of these aircraft at altitude, nozzles visible, turning on and off. End of debate. It's not condensation. Condensation doesn't behave in that way. Have you ever seen an Arctic researcher or Antarctic researcher whose breath is condensing? Do they have giant clouds hanging above their heads for hours? Of course not. Condensation doesn't do that. Further, a high-bypass turbofan jet engine, that's all military tankers, all commercial carriers. That's a jet-powered fan by design, nearly incapable of producing any condensation trail except under rare and extreme circumstances. Deductive reasoning should tell people you don't have grid patterns in the sky one day and nothing the next unless something radical is going on. So back to your precipitation patterns. This is RF microwave transmission affecting those precipitation systems as they come in and, again, causing very irregular patterns. And this is all part of the overall climate engineering technology. There is nothing we can say is natural at this point, nothing. And that is why those in power will try till the last possible moment to keep the public from waking up to this issue, because if they do, every single weather cataclysm becomes suspect. That doesn't mean that without climate engineering, we wouldn't have weather catastrophe. We would. But would any specific event have happened in the way it did, at the time it did, in the place it did, without climate engineering? And the answer is no, we can't say that it would have, because the entire planetary system has been totally disrupted, which makes every single climate cataclysm event a liability for those involved with these programs.
And God forbid we question those genocidal maniacs in power, Dane. I just want to, I wish I had this image. I'm so sorry. I actually have an image that shows a beam going from the ocean towards the areas that have been flood affected. But this is the picture on the right for the audience. This is from the Bureau of Meteorology. It says a huge weather system passed over this area last night. It just looks like a block, Dane. It looks like a block. And in the other image that I couldn't find, I really wanted to include it in the presentation, but it shows a similar thing and then a beam coming from the ocean. It's a clear beam. And we've got multiple images of things like this. What are these beams that are coming from the ocean or from even inland towards these weather patterns?
What we see typically, and often you can see this, for example, and it's more visible in the ground-based transmitters, you'll see what looks like spokes coming out from a central location. When you look at some of the precipitation loops, and it looks like a beam coming out from a core central location, again, like spokes in a wheel. And that's simply the transmission facility, and that's the transmission going out in every direction. And it's very visible, and you're exactly right. And can that be coming off the ocean? Short answer, yes. We have what's called SBX radar. In fact, that would be an interesting image to pull up. SBX radar looks like a massive golf ball on top of an oil derrick. They're huge. Now, there's smaller SBX systems on ships, not as powerful. But if you look at some of the SBX radar, there you go. That's part of the weather mod scenario right there. And they can move that around. They can create, we see low pressure systems over the oceans that have 90 degree corners. Nature does not do that. Nature doesn't make 90 degree corners on anything for weather. And so again, the scope and scale of this this makes the Manhattan Project, if your listeners know what that is, the atomic bomb project that was a massive secret program. Global climate modification makes that look like a backyard project. It's massive. And countries all over the globe, to make this clear as well, they are all colluding and cooperating on this issue, period. That includes countries that we think are in an adversarial scenario, Russia, China, US. They are all working together on these programs. And we have documents at geoengineeringwatch.org. One of them is 800 pages long, US Senate document. It's there for anybody who wants to see it. Important sections highlighted. That specifically outlines the cooperation of nations on this issue, because you can't just geoengineer over your own country without affecting the entire planet. They're all doing it for their own reasons. They know they can't support their populations. They are absolutely working together on this, just like they are with COVID. No one could argue that countries are all working together on COVID. It cannot be otherwise. Same with climate engineering. So again, the ramifications of what's unfolding cannot be overstated. And the assault coming from our skies, it must be considered priority. We can hide from the injection. I know that's very difficult in many places, but again, we're back to how long can we hold our breath?
Yes, absolutely. I want to also just touch on the graphene issue. So you've released a documentary on this, and you're finding graphene in these in the skies now as well. Now I want to know, is that new findings, or has this been happening for a long time? And what are the implications for human beings?
Well, the implications are grave. We have just recently identified graphene in our precipitation tests, and we weren't looking for it before. And further, even when we began to look for it, it was extremely difficult to get anyone that was willing to test for it, because they are discouraged to test for it, just like our medical institutions here are discouraged very overtly from testing any individual for aluminum in their system. In the case of some of the biggest medical institutions here, Kaiser Permanente, for example, if you ask for an aluminum test, there's a big red banner that comes up and says, you know, no. I mean, they don't want people to know that this is building up in their systems. But back to the graphene, we identified climate science study advocating for graphene as an ice nucleating element. This is, again, a very important part of climate engineering. Their ability to seed clouds with chemical nucleating elements to cause what's called an endothermic reaction. It's an energy absorbing reaction, which can literally create a snowstorm out of what should have been a rainstorm. And for those that don't think this is possible, I would encourage them to search Chinese scientists engineer snowstorm. They openly announced they did it. Fox News covered it, Popular Science, every other major network. They did $1 billion worth of damage to Beijing, and they went silent after that for obvious reasons. It's happening everywhere. We're seeing it in the US everywhere. It goes from 85 degrees to 20 degrees in snow in hours, literally. And we've tested that snow. Again, in addition to all the elements we've already named, we have surfactants also. Surfactants are what makes soap soap. It changes the molecular tension in water molecules. But that's used to keep the particles from coagulating together as they're dispersed in the aircraft. So we have surfactants in this mix as well. All of that showing up in our precipitation. I call it frozen precipitation because it's not really snow. It comes in lots of different forms and shapes and sizes now. It's ridiculous. That depends on the conditions. And they use this as a weapon. Again, the ability to freeze out protesters, for example, if you might remember Occupy Wall Street, they had the October surprise. Suddenly it's snowing in October, and all the Wall Street protesters just were demoralized and left. Same with the Dakota Pipeline protesters. We captured that on precipitation loops, 50-degree rain, flashing out the snow directly over the Dakota protesters. That's not nature. We have instances, for example, we had in October, I know this data inside out, upside down, this is all I do, and these dates are exact. Your listeners can look them up. On October 4th, 2013, in South Dakota, there was a flash snowstorm, started snowing at 40 degrees, killed 100,000 cattle. And I captured the weather maps because I knew they would be promptly erased offline, and they were. But we have them at geoengineeringwatch.org. And for your listeners to understand that, our website, geoengineeringwatch.org. We're non-political, no advertising.
So, linked in the description below for
thank
the
you.
Users.
Yeah. So on this snowstorm, thank you very much for that. At this snowstorm again, October 4th, 2013, at the same time it was killing 100,000 cattle in South Dakota, a stone throw away in Kansas City, it was 85 degrees and raining. Kansas City was 89 degrees and raining. Chicago, another stone throw away, was 85 degrees and raining. How could 100,000 cold hardy cattle die in a flash snowstorm at that time of year? And 2 or 3 days later, they were all laying around in the mud, dead. We've seen the same thing in the Southern Hemisphere. In one case, up to 250,000 cold hardy alpacas killed in a flash snowstorm because this material is incredibly cold to the touch. It's chemically nucleated. So it literally flash freezes. It sticks to everything. It causes trees to fall. It's like concrete. This is not a naturally nucleated material. This is literally engineered winter weather warfare. So back to the graphene. Graphene we found in science study being advocated for use in this process because it works for an artificial ice nucleating element. But again, it works for a biological carrier as well. And if your listeners look up toxicological effects of graphene, it reads like a horror story. It's like a vascular machete. I mean, there's nothing bad it doesn't do. So again, we're in a fight for life, plain and simple. If we can't stop this from contaminating every breath we take, that's a fight for life. We need to deal with this.
And is it graphene or graphene oxide that you're finding?
It's GO, graphene oxide.
Graphene oxide. Now, I want to ask, this graphene oxide that you're finding, is there any evidence? This may seem like a strange question to you, but there's a reason I'm asking. If you're finding it in the rain, is there any evidence that it's self-assembling technology type graphene oxide that's in this?
That's a profound question. And the answer is yes. And we're very careful about what we say at geoengineeringwatch.org. If we can't back it up, we don't say it. I've been shown the photographs. Now, the researchers that conducted this testing for us did so as covertly as they could. It's with a major institution. They think they have lost a grant because of this, even though they tried to do this as under the radar as they could. They weren't told why the grant was taken. They sent me photographs of some of the vials that contain graphene, and there were patterns that they had never seen inside the test vials, symmetrical patterns, and they are completely alarmed about what they saw. So
we're talking about vials of rainfall, vials of...
Yes. Precipitation sample vials. Yes. And the material in there had adhered to the inside of that vial, clear glass vial, and had formed a symmetrical pattern inside the test tube container.
I recall on one of the documentaries, and forgive me, I don't remember which one it was, saying that there were certain materials that could only be absorbed by human beings through inhalation and through injection. And the nanoparticles, the particular nanoparticles that this documentary was referencing, was talking about how the two ways that human beings would take these materials in would be through inhalation and injection. What we're finding, and the reason I'm asking this, Dane, is because there is more and more evidence across the world from different scientists and researchers that we're finding this nanotechnology, self-assembling nanotechnology, in the blood of those who had been injected with mRNA technology of the COVID-19 vaccines, so-called vaccines. And now they're also finding it in individuals who've not had these injections. And so is it, from what you're saying, it's we're finding it in the rain. Is it possible that we're inhaling this graphene oxide and that it's coming into our bodies regardless?
It's not just possible, it's a certainty. It's an absolute certainty. If it's in the precipitation, it's in the air column, which means we're breathing it. There's no question. It's not speculation, it's not theory, not hypothesis. We are absolutely positively inhaling graphene. There's no question. Same with aluminum. It's in the air column, we're inhaling it. Period. Every individual we have tested hair, blood, urine is packed full of aluminum. Now, to try to perform that type of test with graphene, we have not found anybody willing to do it yet. We have institutions, for example, in Northern California, we tried to get an engineering firm that normally tests snow for pollution elements. They refused to simply conduct the test for us because they did not want to be a part of this issue. They're so afraid that they won't even do what they normally do in the course of business because they don't want to become involved in this fight. And so, where is courage? I mean, how much does their job or their vocation matter when we are all literally about a foot from impact going 100 miles an hour into a concrete wall? And that's a given. Their paychecks, pensions aren't going to matter, retirements aren't going to matter. What people need to understand is we are at the deciding moment of human existence. At this point, I want to put, if I may, Maria, just to put this into statistical context.
Yes.
We are neck deep in the sixth great mass extinction on our planet, but the difference now is this extinction is happening at minimum hundreds of times faster than any previous paleo event. We are losing right now species to extinction, minimum 200 to 300 a day. That's 15,000 times faster than the background rate. That's 1.5% of normal. We've lost 70% of Earth's wildlife populations in the last 40 years alone. At the current rate of loss, which is accelerating, we face 0 hour for no functional wildlife populations left on planet Earth in 2026. That doesn't mean things stay normal until then. It means when you reach this point, it's like the amoebas in a petri dish. Once they reach the critical mass, their demise comes quickly because the population issue is so exponential that their habitat is gone. And that's exactly what we face as a species. We have destroyed our habitat, no humans. And again, although there's countless causes, and I'm very familiar with anthropogenic activity and the negative effects, and there are many, and people need to not be so angry, and they're justifiably angry at the environmental groups, and I am as well. Again, the hypocrisy, but we need to look at reality. We need to get past that anger. We need to get that side to get rid of their denial and admit to climate engineering. But the bottom line is, if we hadn't engineered the climate, yes, we'd be in better, much better shape. The forests would have tried to respond. They wouldn't be incinerating, which they're literally using forests as a form of artificial volcano to provide enough atmospheric particulate matter to cool the poles. Everything that the power structure has done has sped up this process. But the bottom line is the paradigm that we all existed in was not sustainable at all. And those in power are most responsible for it. I want to make that clear. If anybody needs to walk the plank, it needs to be them first, because they set this up. But people need to start understanding, again, as I stated earlier, they couldn't do this without us. It's up to us. It's up to us to say no, no more. No more. Free the planet up from this weather warfare, this biological warfare. Allow the planet to respond. And the human race needs to focus on what we need to do to preserve what's left of Earth's life support systems, or we will not be here much longer. We've lost 80 to 90% of Earth's insect population, 80 to 90%, 60 to 70% of the plankton populations. We are again on a fast track to a lifeless ball of rock in space. We need to face this issue. And I know there's many other challenges we face. And I know COVID's related to all this. I'm trying to get people to tile that together. The bottom line factor fueling all this, the bottom line factor fueling COVID and the power structure's desperation to administer this vaccination, which we know the harm it's causing, and they're certainly trying to cull populations, but all of it is a direct result of their response to biosphere collapse. Because it's happening.
I think that people need to be angry, Dane. I think that people need
I
to be
do too.
angry about the ways that power and control and money-hungry maniacs have destroyed this planet, destroyed humanity, destroyed what it even means to be human, moving us to this transhuman agenda, human 2.0. By the sounds of it, we won't even have a planet to live in by then. And it just all looks like something out of a completely dystopian movie, and people should be angry, especially if this stuff, you know, how many people avoided these injections because they saw something was not right, because they felt that something evil was going to happen as a result of this. And now we're finding out and seeing that, well, we're inhaling it anyway, and we've got nanotech in our blood. And I mean, it needs to stop. It needs to stop, and more people need to know about this. You know, there needs to be mass awareness. Otherwise, I am concerned, like you, Dane, we won't have a world to live in anymore. We won't have humanity to save if we don't get serious about these issues. And I know that the viewers that are watching are serious about these issues, but the whole purpose is to educate people more so that when you are talking to people out there and trying to desperately wake up the masses, grab them by the shoulders and shake them and say, we're running out of time. These people, these maniacs are taking over. This is the information that you need. I'm just going to show the viewers the website, Dane. So this is geoengineeringwatch.org. Fantastic resources on this website. I would highly recommend watching the latest documentary, The Dimming. I watched it with someone else who's been an avid, researcher for years, and they said it's one of the best that they've seen, Dane. So congratulations on that documentary. It's fantastic. But this website has so many resources. You've got you mentioned the regular weekly show, Dane.
Global Alert News, which we pay for out of pocket, so there's no commercials, no politics. We just picked up two more cities, Las Vegas and Phoenix. We're in about a dozen cities around the country, but again, commercial-free hour, one-hour update per week on the most dire and immediate issues we face. And to elaborate, Maria, to expound on what you stated, we should be angry, and I fully agree with you. I exist in a controlled state of rage. That is every single day. That's what fuels me forward in this fight. It is intolerable to live under toxic skies that's killing everything I love. Every bat, bird, bee, bear, none of them have a voice. None of them, except for us. And we owe this back. I would argue, and especially those with children, we don't own our lives anymore. We owe it. We owe it to the whole. And so at this point, we have to ask ourselves, why are we here? And if not to fight this battle, then why?
Other than raising awareness, is there anything else that we can do? I see that there is a lawsuit filed here, Dane.
Yes, help us to share that data from the homepage, sharing the dimming from the homepage, because Facebook is trying to censor us because of that lawsuit is because of that. We're suing the single scientist that got Facebook to censor it because he said it wasn't so. Not a shred of data, no duplicate testing, nothing. He just said it wasn't so, and they did it. So we're suing him personally. But about critical awareness, about that critical mass of awareness, I would argue if we can do that, then the rest of the wheels in the battle will turn on their own as people in every arena, those with the ability to make a difference, will realize that in fact they are fighting for their lives as well. It is the most critical leap forward we can make. It gives us a chance to stop these programs from the inside out, as those participating and their families realizing are forced to realize that they are killing themselves along with the rest of us. Only by reaching this critical mass of awareness can we stop these programs from the inside out. And if we can do that, we can buy time to start facing other issues. But we must deal with the biggest hole in the bottom of the boat first. Again, if we continue to inhale these materials, even without them making the mix much more lethal, we're not going to be firing on enough neurons to make any difference soon. So again, we have to deal with this issue. But the critical mass of awareness is the first and most important leap forward. And your listeners can look at the activist suggestions link on the homepage of geoengineeringwatch.org to get specific instructions on how to help.
Wonderful. Again, for everyone watching, it is such a fantastic website. It's very comprehensive. There is years and years of research on this site. As you can see, Dane really knows what he's talking about. It's not just us sharing photos saying, my goodness, they're doing something, but we don't know what they're doing. This website explains it all, and your research is second to none, Dane, really. So I've linked the documentary in the description below, The Dimming. Please do watch it. Share this video, share this documentary with everyone that you know. Everyone always says, well, I'm sharing and no one's waking up. You never know what sort of a seed you're going to sow. We need massive awareness as to all of the ways that we are being targeted as humanity right now before it's too late. Go ahead to zmedia.com for all of my latest interviews and give this video a rumble down in the bottom left-hand corner of your screen. Again, Dane, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
The gratitude is mine to you and to your listeners and followers. Without you, we wouldn't have a voice. It's a team effort. Let's all keep banging the drums because time is not on our side. Thank you.
Thank you. And everyone, God bless. Thank you for keeping me in your prayers, and I will see you soon.